welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo, and I am Demetrius Malbro, your host. And today we have another episode lined up for you around how AI is changing data protection. And as you know, the headlines are just teeming with lots of information around artificial intelligence and Gen AI and all the regulations and everything that's coming down the pipes. And so I want to welcome a special guest, Jordan Winkleman. He is the Field Solutions CTO over at Quantum. So Jordan, welcome to the Gumbo. How are you?
I'm doing well, and thank you for having me today.
In your own words, what you have been up to in the last few years within the industry and also over at Quantum?
Great. Well, I've been in the industry data management for about 25 years, between working on the client side for 15 years in the advertising, media, and entertainment world in Chicago, and then moved to the vendor manufacturer side of the world and started selling storage working for Quantum, where I had previously been a customer for both the tape products as well as for the StorNext file system. Okay. For the last decade or so, I've been helping customers build out multi-petabyte video media and entertainment focused video SAN solutions, as well as multi-petabyte and getting into the exascale realm for large scale tape archives.
Okay. Awesome. I heard petabyte scale and some other types of sizing going on there. So you have a pretty deep technical background. And I really want to tap into around some of that sizing around large language models and just being able to kind of really explain what's going on in the world of AI and the intersection of data protection and data management. Mm-hmm. And I really want to find out from you as well, how do you see, or how are you viewing AI being integrated into modern data management and protection solutions these days?
Well, you keyed in on it pretty quickly. You have a lot of regulation and compliance associated, or at least should be associated around what you're actually training your models with. Okay. There's far too many times we're hearing about how the companies that are creating some of these AIs don't really know what's in their training model data sets. So they can't really explain how an AI comes to an inference or a conclusion, if you want to call it, for whatever the request really is. Mm-hmm. If you can't actually go and show a regulator or, you know, even who your direct customers are, what that training data set is, then it's, you know, what is it today versus what is it yesterday versus what is it a year ago? Or 5 years ago at the appropriate point. So we look at how you protect and preserve the data associated with the training models, whether it's for that compliance or whether it's for retraining a model in the future with newer tools and data sets available to expand upon the number of tokens and various input elements that you have for that AI model. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at the number of files that are created and the amount of metadata associated with all of those various files for those training data sets, the amount of data that you're preserving gets pretty astronomical. We're seeing an explosion of both structured and unstructured data growth at this point. Hmm. So it's becoming out of control from the amount of storage that's actually being consumed by this. But you still need to be able to preserve that data and know that it's durable enough to use as your company's intellectual property. Mm-hmm. How to, you know, build and monetize all those assets, but you do have to preserve and protect them.
So, and you mentioned preserve a few times, and so from your perspective, what's the best way to preserve that data and also keep that data safe? Because we keep hearing stories around cyber breaches and lots of different ransomware attack stories as well. Not to say that that's going to happen to a large language model, but it could happen, right? Depending on how safe and secure the systems are that's actually housing that data.
Absolutely. I'd be more worried about the model being poisoned by malicious data sets being inserted so that you can influence what the output of a model would be. That's probably a lot harder to find than the whole system got encrypted by ransomware. Mm-hmm. You need to know very specifically. Sometimes there's billions or trillions of objects or tokens in these data sets. So it's very important to know exactly what was in your data set when. And so having a catalog to preserve that, you know, that audit log, that tracking to make certain that what is coming out is what you intended that actually went into the system. But you still also need to follow common data management guidelines, 3-2-1-1, three copies of your data, two different media types, one offsite, one in the cloud, or, you know, take your pick what your 3-2-1-1-0 model means to each different vendor. But it becomes more challenging in the world of AI because of the huge amounts of storage required for some of these models and these data sets. When your data set is a petabyte or 10 petabytes or an exabyte, how do you protect that data? So being at Quantum, you know, we are the tape people. We are the object storage people. We are the object storage on tape people. Mm. Believe that you protect that data once in the most durable format and geo-protect it using object storage to preserve that data for hopefully dozens or hundreds of years with automated data movement to simplify the process of managing that data for the long term.
You mentioned tape, and tape always has a spot in my heart because I was a backup administrator maybe over a decade ago and had to deal with tape, and it was the latest and greatest. And I know I remember LTO just increasing. I don't know where we're at now, right now with LTO, LTO 9.
LTO 9, yep.
9? Wow,
18 okay. 18 terabytes native per tape.
I got that right. And compression and speeds and feeds is probably really ridiculous with how fast it can write and how much data can be compressed and held on one tape.
Well, you know, it's funny. People have this impression, mistaken in my mind, that tape is slow. An individual tape drive is about 400 megabytes per second at line rate today. That's actually quite fast. That's faster than hard drives. The difference is the latency of access to the time to first byte, essentially, when on tape. If you have an appropriate storage system to be able to accept the data going into or coming out of a large number of tape drives, that bandwidth requirement can actually be pretty tremendous. And if you think about how the scale of the public cloud works, where customers are putting terabytes to petabytes to exabytes of data in these public cloud environments, how fast do you think the landing zone storage systems have to be to ingest a petabyte of data in an hour? How many tape drives do you think that requires? Yeah. So there are fun, interesting challenges to preserve that kind of data, but also to hopefully bring in data management technologies that can help you reduce the number of copies that you're storing of that data while also increasing the durability. That's the important part. Knowing that the data coming off the media is what you wrote to it in the first place is more important than actually being able to retrieve it or even protect that data in the first place.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And also, as AI and deep learning continue to advance, what are some of the strategies that you think should be considered for future-proofing data protection and also backup solutions?
Well, the data sets are so large today that you need to work on ways that you're ingesting the data into your archive or backup platform immediately upon ingest to your primary storage so that you're not doing a traditional, you know, backup and recovery window. I'm doing a full backup on a weekly or monthly or you know, whatever my schedule basis is. Now, that's assuming that I have a week to do a full backup on a petabyte or more of data. No, you're going to protect it once, maybe twice, possibly three times. Yeah. And do it in a format that's secure and durable and do it in a manner that isn't wasting your networking resources, your storage resources, the media, and limiting the lifespan of these data sets.
Okay. And do you have any insights, or I always love to hear some of these real world applications and case studies as well. You've been around just as long as I have, 20 plus years in the industry, just around integrating from an end-to-end data management perspective. And you mentioned unstructured and structured data and just overall around managing the entire life cycle of data. Do you have any interesting stories or real world stories that you can share with us?
Well, having that end-to-end, you know, lifecycle management of your data is critically important. And Quantum is actually one of a few vendors that can actually help customers go from the beginning life of whatever that data is, whether it's, you know, bits in a database or whether it's an image file or an audio file or, you know, Word document, has primary storage technologies like our all-flash file and object store called Myriad. We have a different file system for making video content called StoreNext, and it's utilized for all the movies that you go to the theater to see and many of the TV shows you watch on, you know, whether it's streaming or whatever. I guess we really shouldn't call them TV shows so much anymore. But then we also help preserve the structured data. Quantum actually created variable block data deduplication 20-some years ago. And so we have a dedupe appliance to preserve that type of data set. But then we also have object storage and tape media that help you preserve the unstructured data, which typically doesn't compress or reduce very well, via the entire portfolio. And whether you look at it in the agnostic realm of we partner with every different backup or archive vendor out in the market, which, by the way, we do, but we also resell a number of different vendors' products to kind of fill those gaps in the portfolio of what Quantum provides. But we can help customers preserve and protect all of the data that they have of whatever variety, because we do have the most complete portfolio from a data management perspective on the market.
And Jordan, you took me back when you mentioned deduplication. Mm-hmm. You took me back to Data Domain and the EMC days. And I mean, there was a whole campaign around tape is dead. And I mean, those were the good old days, but it was crazy.
You know, what's funny is that for Data Domain to get acquired by EMC, they had to give Quantum a 9-figure check.
Ooh, didn't realize that.
Yep. Quantum has the patent for inline variable block data deduplication.
And okay.
Any of the dedupe appliances on the market that claim that they're, you know, variable block data deduplication, there's a few main players in the market. Mm-hmm. We're all basically the same device that has within 1% of the data reduction of each other.
Right.
I wonder why that's the case.
And when you mentioned dedupe, there's also a cost saving perspective when it comes to being able to only maybe send one block versus sending 10 different PowerPoint presentations, right? Because you're going to dedupe that down and only send the change block right between those different files. Now, as far as cost is concerned, what are some of the considerations for, you know, maybe cost effectively securing and also storing data, especially when you're talking maybe going from on-prem to also in the cloud?
That's a tough one. You know,
I know it's a tough
always one. It depends. You know, certain data sets are going to dedupe and compress very, very well, in which case maybe you have an on-premise device and you have a virtual machine in the cloud and you can have your offsite replicated version where you have potentially a month or a year or even a few years of content sitting in that dedupe repository. Mm-hmm. But that's entirely dependent on what the daily change rate of that data set looks like. So maybe in the case of a database, not such a big deal. But when you're dealing with lots of unstructured data, that's probably not going to work so well because most of the file formats are already compressing data today. So image data, audio data, video files, there's all of that data is already compressed. Scientific content also typically compressed before it hits whatever the primary storage system is.
Okay.
So in those cases, you're probably looking at some kind of high performance on-premise storage, whether object or some kind of file platform, push the same data sets to the cloud as a secondary copy or of your retention copy. And again, Quantum has technologies to do these things, whether it's the dedupe appliance pushing in deduplicated blocks into an S3 tier. We call that cloud share off DXI. There's too many options really to go into on a podcast like this, because it's really going to be focused around what the customer specific need is. What I do find funny though is that anybody who really thinks that tape is, you know, leaving the world of backup today is probably sorely not well informed, I'll say, about what the public cloud really is. Because Quantum actually is has the number one share in hyperscale tape, is what I'll say. Mm-hmm. You might call cold or deep, in the public cloud, there's a pretty significant chance it's landing in a quantum tape library.
Mm-hmm.
Where that tape has moved from, whether it's the nightly batch backup or whether it's getting pushed into the public cloud for those retention copies.
Yeah, I am aware of that as well, that when you talk public cloud, they are the number one consumers of tape drives, right? And tapes, et cetera, because like, as you mentioned, deep storage, cold storage, all of that stuff is stored on the most cost-effective medium. And in that case, it's tape because it's reliable. And then you, in some cases, you have a virtual air gap or an air gap to keep that that segment completely segmented off from the other environment, right, as well. Now, maybe one final question here for you, Jordan. What is your prediction around generative AI and artificial intelligence for the data management and in particular the backup and recovery and storage?
Well, I think we covered, you know, a good chunk of it on this call already. It's preserving the data and knowing what you're preserving is what you expect it to be. Poisoning of the data sets for these AI models. If you go back to retrain your model a later date and somebody's found a way to put some malware of whatever variety in your model, you've got to protect against that. And so you're probably looking for some kind of immutable storage for the final data sets of that particular model. So whether it's worm media on tape or whether it's object lock on some kind of object storage appliance, you need to know that the data is what you think it is. And you also need to be looking out for all the various different types of malware activity where, you know, all of the files in your system are being touched and monitoring those audit logs to understand what those touches are. So that you have to have the same kind of security practices that we're looking at from a networking perspective associated to the storage systems as well, because it's a network attached storage device. The question is, how do you apply those multiple layers of security to your data management approach?
Yeah. And what I was hinting at is that, is AI going to maybe alleviate or take over a backup administrator's job one day or a storage administrator's job one day?
I don't think so.
It's just going to enhance it, right?
You know, there's understanding how the data sets are preserved. It's one thing to be able to inference data from a data set and, you know, determine what is in an image. It's a different kind of thing to make reason occur as opposed to, you know, inferring. While that may happen in the future of AI, that's certainly not the today of AI. As cool as AI is and as capable as it is at creating content, it's still not able to reason quite yet. Maybe with future multimodal models that are coming out, maybe that'll become closer to it being a thing. But unless I'm completely mistaken myself, we're still a few years away from there.
Yeah, this thing is moving really fast. So we're all guessing at this point. And we didn't know OpenAI was going to kick the door open for AI and kind of where everything is headed right now. NVIDIA is just through the roof with their platform, and the stock is literally just like skyrocketing, right? So stock market is doing very well also. And maybe one final thing, a book recommendation for you. You look like a reader. Maybe I could use a nice book recommendation. What are you reading now?
Well, mostly tech manuals right now, but if you're looking for an interesting book to read, I am a child of the cyberpunk 80s/90s. One of my first favorite books ever was called Neuromancer by William Gibson. Mm. And I just saw that Apple TV Plus is going to do a 10 episode series on that. Eagerly awaiting seeing what it is that they're going to do, probably years away still at this point. They just announced it. But it is a defining book for kind of the world that we live in today of artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
How it can interact with the daily world that we live in today and just be a cool, futuristic, forward-looking book that created the coined the term cyberspace in the first place. So back in 1984, quite important book in just looking at where we are from a technology and a sociological impact. The book actually had quite a big impact on what all of the things that you've seen in sci-fi for the last 40 years.
Okay. Have you seen Transcendence with Johnny Depp?
I have not.
2014, I want to say.
Okay.
You have to check that out. That movie is spot on. That's all I'm going to say.
Transcendence,
okay. Right?
Yep. Transcendent.
I will have to check that out. Will Caster, that's Johnny Depp's role. And there's a big artificial intelligence component in it. And it shows like how out of hand that it can get, but it's really intelligent as far as the way that they portray the story of transcendence and kind of the entire plot. So you definitely have to check that out. I love to bring that movie up and also go back and watch it every once in a while myself.
Nice.
All right.
Check out Room Answer. I think you'll dig it on the AI topic of the day.
And I think I've heard of it before as well. So I'll have to go back and take a peek at that also. Well, Jordan, thank you so much for taking time out to be a guest right here on Data Protection Gumbo. And before I let you go, is there maybe a way that Gumbo listeners can reach out to you, get in touch with you, or any final shout out that you would like to leave for the audience?
They can find me on the various LinkedIn or LinkedIn. Twitter or I guess it's called X today as under Jordan Winkleman, or you can go to quantum.com and find the chat bot and ask for information about any of the various different technologies we've talked about, and you'll get routed to the right people. And depending on some of the cool things, whether it's, you know, petabytes of unstructured data management, the conversation will probably get routed to me in some manner anyways. So
nice. And if you are not already a part of the LinkedIn group that I run, it's called Backup and Recovery Professionals. There's about 26,000 members in that group, so backup storage, cybersecurity, C-suite, and technical individuals as well. Be sure to go check that group out as well, Jordan.
I just joined right before the call.
Oh, okay. Well, awesome. And so this is also a plug for the rest of the audience. Please go out, join the group, and we're having great conversations such as the ones that we're having right here on the podcast. So, Jordan, thank you again for being a guest on.
Thanks, Demetrius.